deliberate practice is very hard in management because you don't tend to see the same situations again and again. Like, hopefully you don't. And so you have to figure out how to learn as much as possible from any situation, even with all the variables and all the messiness of human behavior. And like, how do you distill it? How do you take the learnings? How do you improve what you need to improve?
Welcome to the Super Managers Podcast, where we interview leaders from all walks of life to tease out the habits, thought patterns, learnings, and experiences that help them be extraordinary at the fine craft of management. Our goal is to bring you the lessons and the insights so that you don't have to learn through your own mistakes, but so that you can shortcut your way to being a great leader. This podcast is brought to you by Fellow, a software platform that helps managers and their teams collaborate on meeting agendas, track action items, and turn chaotic meetings into productive work sessions. Check it out at www.fellow.app. Hey, fellow managers and leaders, I'm Aiden, and I'm the CEO of Fellow.app. Today's guest is none other than Kate Houston. She's currently the engineering director of mobile at DuckDuckGo, and prior to that, she was head of developer experience at Automattic, the company that produces WordPress.com, which of course a large portion of the websites on the internet currently runs on. She was an engineering director at Ride.com and even spent some time at Google. And she's been a digital nomad for a very large portion of her career. She's worked remotely in countries such as China and Colombia, the US and Canada, and even Australia. In this episode, we spend a lot of time talking about remote work. We talk about the best practices that she's learned over her time working remotely. We dive into asynchronous communication and asynchronous meetings and the secret to doing them well. We even talk a lot about interviewing, everything from the best things that she's learned about interviewing her team from all across the world. We even dive into the concept of interviewing your manager and how to do that in the most effective way. This episode is for anybody out there looking to get better at remote management. There's a lot of lessons, but also a lot of tactical advice. So without further ado, here's Kate Houston on episode 30 of the Super Managers Podcast. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we were just chatting before this, but we have something in common in that both of us have gone to the University of Ottawa.
Well, I dropped out. I don't know if they're claiming me as one of their own, but yeah, I definitely spent some time there.
Yeah, it's not very often that I get to meet people from my alma mater, so that's kind of cool. But I mean, to kick things off, you've been a digital nomad for a very large portion of your career. Tell us about that. Like, what got you interested? How did you get into this world of remote work before everybody?
Yeah, totally. I was a nomadic for about 3 years. But before that, I like was moving all over the place anyway. So I lived in Canada, I lived in Australia. And then after I left Google, I just, you know, that's when I went like fully nomadic. And I was just kind of splitting my time between South America and Europe. And then my first management job was it was technically based in Colombia. So I was supposed to get a visa and go to Colombia. And then in the way of like chaotic startups, I accidentally ended up as a like questionably legal migrant in Colombia with no visa. And there was no company incorporated in Colombia, but I was just like working there. And, you know, they're pretty chill in Colombia. So with a British passport, you can spend 6 months of the year there. So I was just trying to like time things out. And when I wasn't in Colombia, I would just be somewhere else, right? But I remember when I left at the end of that year, they were just like, "We're glad you like Colombia. You can come back next year."
That's awesome.
But I've been in and out. I've been in and out so much. My passport was like full of stamps. And so no one could tell how much time I'd spent anywhere. Yeah. And eventually it was full and I got stuck in Thailand. But that's like a wholly different story. So anyway, I'd been kind of like half, you know, living in Colombia and half elsewhere. And then when I was looking for I was starting to think about my next job, and Matt Mullenweg at Automattic reached out to me, and then I ended up at Automattic, which has obviously been fully distributed from the get-go. Yeah, I mean, that was great. It was like even more so because the first company I was at, we were like in a similar time zone. You know, we were generally living on EST, but Automattic was like truly, truly global, truly distributed. And so that kind of, I went from like remote on easy mode to like full distributed, and I loved it. Like, I really, really loved it. Like, I like love text-based communication. I'd like been blogging for a long time, and that, meant that I adjusted to it much more easily, I think, than I noticed in people who weren't used to writing.
Yeah, and for people who don't know, Automattic is the company behind WordPress, and I think I don't know what portion of the world's websites still run on the WordPress framework.
I think it was like 34%.
Yeah, which is like an enormous percentage, and yeah, so Automattic obviously have been they've been distributed from the get-go. So when you started working at Automattic, was it foreign to you, like the way that they were operating, or did it feel just at home?
It felt super natural. One thing to understand about Automattic, and this is also true about DuckDuckGo, is like they're built on this premise of open source software, right? And this is how open source communities work and how they've always worked, right? And there's this acceptance of a little bit of chaos, there's this kind of embrace of text-based medium, and there's this need to document, right? Because people come and go in like an open source community. And so when you kind of build companies on top of those open source principles, it makes a lot of sense, and it all, I think, goes together. The open source nature of how things work, and then the like very high levels of transparency in kind of running the company, and like both internally and often externally, right? Like Matt was quoted as saying, like, you can share anything except the password files. Which is really cool if you like to write, which I do, because I could write about like pretty much anything. And then, to kind of work with it is like adapting to an open source project, right? And so, everything was there, everything was documented. Like the way that things worked was clearly laid out, for posterity, right? So as I joined the team, I like spent, I don't know, a couple of days just like reading everything the team had produced like that year. So for the last 6 months, and like really got a sense of like where things have been going, and like both what was there and also what wasn't there.
Now that so many more teams are distributed, it's interesting that you can walk into a company like Automattic and not need to talk to 300 people, and you could just start reading and reading and get all that context very quickly. One thing that I wanted to, I guess since we're talking about Automattic, I mean, today you're engineering director at DuckDuckGo, which is a search engine, an anonymous search engine. And obviously you ran developer experience at Automattic, so you were very much, curating the experience for all those folks. And obviously you talked about your time in Colombia at Ride.com. To look back at your whole sort of like career history, who would you say is a memorable or a favorable boss that you learned from?
I reported to Matt for most of the time I was at Automattic, which is obviously an intense learning experience. If you report to the CEO, you learn to manage up very well, and you also learn how to like meet your own needs, right? Because they have a very, very hard job and they don't really have time for you. So, I had a coach that I've worked with since I was at Ride, and that's been really helpful to kind of give me that continuity when, I can't really expect it from the people above me. I was thinking about this question earlier because you sent it me in the prep, and like the most memorable manager was like probably my worst manager, And when I became a manager, I thought about him a lot, and like both in terms of like, I don't want to be that dude, but also in this like terror of like, I have a much clearer manager, a much clearer model of what bad looks like than what good looks like. And so from the beginning, I like really saw this need to understand and define for myself what good looks like. So I was going towards it because, I remembered like viscerally this terrible manager telling me that he couldn't be a terrible manager because he was not doing the things that his terrible manager had done. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. I'm never like, this is the thing I'm going to take from you going forward, is I'm going to define good and go towards it and not be like, oh, I have this very strong definition of bad, and so I'm just going to be not that dude, because then you're just another dude
Yeah,
doing
that's
like
so
a bad job.
powerful. It's so interesting because you often think like, I guess he thought he was being a good manager because he had a bad manager and wasn't like him. But I think you bring home a really good point that I hadn't thought of, which is you can't just have a don't be like him person in your life. You also have to be like a let's be like this other person too. So you need both role models almost.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be authentic, you have to be like yourself, right? And so just trying to like be like, like we mentioned Camille Fournier before we spoke, and like Camille's one of my best friends. I love her so much. We're alike in many ways, but like we're not the same, Like I'm not gonna go to work and be like a poor approximation of Camille. Like I really want to go and be the best Kate. And so you know, that's why coaching, I think, has been probably more helpful than like any individual manager I have, because you can read widely and voraciously, but ultimately you're going to kind of practice what you've read imperfectly on other human beings. And having somebody who is just invested in you being the best you, helping you like reflect back and learn as much as you can from those situations, is I think the most powerful, like the most powerful tool for being the best manager you can be.
Yeah, I think that's super wise, and it does take a long time. I don't think people with a lot of clarity on day one can just say this is the true authentic me. I feel like it's a spectrum of discovery over the course of time. Would you agree with that?
Oh, totally, totally. And I mean, especially right now, like I feel like everyone's priorities have fundamentally changed, you know, like who I am authentically as a manager in a pandemic is like very different from who I was authentically as a manager, you know, when I was like nomadic.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point too. Context, the environment means a lot. I have to ask you though, tell me about this this horrible manager that you had. What did he do? What is something people should avoid?
I mean, I think the biggest thing was like gaslighting. Like that was probably the single biggest thing. Like I remember like the team was just like not delivering. There was no accountability. There were deadlines, but nobody talked about the deadlines. But like the reason why you would know there was a deadline was because the tech lead would disappear. So like we had a deadline and the tech lead just disappeared for 3 days to search for his missing cat. It was just like farcical, you know? And I remember talking to this guy and being like, look, I'm like, this team was like going so badly that we got fired by an internal client at Google, which like you have to be doing so poorly to happen, like so poorly. And I remember talking to this guy and saying like, you know, I'm like worried because we've missed this deadline. And he was like, what deadline? There was no deadline.
Yeah.
There was a deadline. Other people knew about it. Like, it was just crazy. I mean, he really wanted to believe he was doing a good job. And I like, you know, was newer in my career and I really wanted to like and respect my manager, but like I couldn't. And I remember one day I was out with a friend and I was like, you know, I realized Ken is a terrible manager. And my friend was like, Kate, I have been trying to tell you that for months.
Yeah. So it's, I think that you bring up a, you know, really interesting point, which is I think like there's just this tendency for people to want to like their managers too. I mean, it's probably not a great place to be if you don't. But yeah, sometimes it's good to kind of see the bigger picture. So I have to ask you on a related note, I mean, you know, and, you know, we talked about, you know, developing over time and getting better over time. What were some of the early mistakes that you think you made when first starting to lead a team? And when was that?
So actually, like, not on that topic, but related to like how important your manager is. Like after that kind of experience, one of the things I took from it is like, I should interview my managers. And so if I'm gonna like, if someone's gonna potentially be my manager, like I'll grill them. I'll be like, how do you do this? What, like, what can I expect from you? And I think those answers have really told me a lot. And then I also try to give it to other people. So when I'm interviewing for people to join my team, I'm like, look, I truly believe that people should get to interview their manager. And so you can ask me anything you want and I will be honest with you. Turns out this is like a really great way to close somebody, but it started off just being like, no, I truly believe that this is important.
Yeah, I think that's two tips in one right there. But tell us about like, what kind of interview questions like should people ask their managers?
Well, so firstly, people need to decide what they care about, right? So many people, I think, are like lost in their career. And when you ask them what they want, they talk about what they don't want, right? And so, you know, they're just looking for, you know, not the sea of red flags, right? They don't have perfect color vision, right? There's all these flags that they can't actually see. You know, you make better decisions when you decide what you're going towards and what you actually care about, right? So, you know, when I joined DuckDuckGo, I like really wanted to get back to working on a product team and delivering product. Like this was really important to me. And I wanted to have a manager and peers that I could learn from. Those were the things that I was like evaluating heavily. And like, obviously there were red flags that could have just been like deal breakers for me. But, you know, I was very clear on like what I cared about and what I didn't care about. And so anything, you know, I was like, okay, well, you know, I don't feel great about that, but like, is it actually one of the things that is truly important to me? And if it wasn't, I would just let it go.
That's really important. Is there like an example question, for example, that you would ask?
I think this is what like individuals have to do. Like sometimes I ask people questions and I see that all they have is like what they don't want. And then I'm just like, oh, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I can help you, right? So I think individuals have to do that work first. And then once they've decided what's really important to them, then they can kind of focus their questions around those topics, right? Talking to your manager about like how they operate with feedback, like how often they're delivering, what's the team strategy and how are they articulating that? And like, how do team members get involved with things? What can they expect from like in terms of growth? Decide what you care about and then ask about the things that you care about, because otherwise you're either asking for like, is this a red flag? Is this, you're like checking for red flags, which are like, tend to be quite narrow and uninspiring questions, right? Or you're asking like very broad questions where like there's not really a good answer to them. It's like, oh, you know, tell me how the team operates day to day. You know, what's an average day like for you? And like my average day is like of no use to any IC who interviews with me, right? Like that's not what their work's going to be like. Once you've decided what you care about, then I think the questions will like flow naturally.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So I have to ask you, so I mean, this concept, and we're totally going off script here, but this concept of, you know, the manager read me, you know, it's this like concept that's popularized and people write a lot about themselves, managers do it, and then they may give it to their team. Like, what would you say if you're kind of trying to interview like your manager and they just hand you this readme? Is that a good or bad sign?
Probably like swipe left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next.
Yeah.
I have like very mixed feelings about the manager readme. Like, I think most people are just like, they haven't had enough therapy to write a truly accurate manager read. This is my like assessment of them. And, you know, like they were popularized. And I remember like this really popular guy wrote a manager read me. And I was like, well, this isn't stupid, but I've heard terrible things about working with this guy. So I sent it to one of my friends who had worked with him. And like her reply was, if only he did any of these things.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. You know, and I have mixed feelings about it too. And, you know, part of it is like, you know, say that you have a, I don't know. So, you know, people, one of my flaws that I'm always trying to work on is to always give more positive feedback as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And say I tend to lean towards, you know, just like, how can we improve this type feedback? So if I put that on my manager readme, is that all of a sudden an excuse for me to never change? Like, this is why I have a little bit of mixed feelings, like you said as well. Like, is it a license to just operate the way you are and not improve? I don't know. So those are some of the things that I think about.
Yeah, I actually wrote a manager readme, but then never shared it with anyone. Like, and I tried to write it in a like really honest way. And then I was like, I'm not sure I can share this with people because I seem incompetent. So I was just like really for myself on all the things that I thought I needed to do better. But I also think, you know, I think to your point that it kind of like enforces a power dynamic, you know, that's like, this is how I am. You must work with me as I am. It's much more interesting to get your employees read me, you know? And so I ask every new person that I start managing, like, how do you like to get feedback? How do I know if you're struggling?
Yeah, that's a great question. Very good question. Yeah, I agree with the power dynamic concept, but I also agree with another point that you were subtly hinting at, which is that, you know, even if you don't share it, the process of actually coming up with one is probably instructive and useful in a lot of ways. It's kind of like a retrospective. And and like you said, it might make sense to update that sort of thing, even if you don't share it with anyone, probably every so often.
Yeah. I used to be really worried about sharing things I wrote on management with my team, because like I'll write about, I don't know, how to do a great onboarding experience or how to like define a strategy. And of course, when you write, like you write things in a tidy way, right? But like real life, real work, like doesn't show up like that. And everything that I've written about, you know, I've also failed at, right? And that's why I like learned it well enough to articulate it. And then, you know, eventually I decided I felt uncomfortable with that. So I should share it and like tell them that, you know, they should call me out if I'm falling short on these things, because it's what I'm aspiring to.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. And you are right. Like, you know, for all the people who do write about management, I mean, a lot of these lessons are learned from making mistakes. So nobody's perfect. But, you know, one thing that I can't not talk to you about is, you know, particularly given just all your background on like distributed work, I wanted to ask you about like synchronous and asynchronous meetings, right? So for all of those people who are now like, you know, forcibly working remote and mm-hmm. they're just literally doing everything that they used to in the office just on a remote schedule, I'd love for you to tell us about what is an asynchronous meeting and what kind of meetings should be asynchronous?
Yeah, so any meeting that's boring, I think, should be asynchronous. This is my new definition.
I mean, like, that's very quick and to the point. I was expecting this long, you know, drawn out explanation, but that's, I think like that's, you know, if you have a boring detector and just, okay, this should be asynchronous. I mean, that could work.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, just think about it, like status update, boring unless it's a problem, right? So your status update should obviously be asynchronous. Sprint updates are like very boring until people disagree. Right. So you should get all the points of your like sprint planning where people agree into an asynchronous meeting. You know, most presentations are pretty boring. Again, those are things, you know, make them async, put them in writing and like have hopefully a livelier discussion in the comments. And if there's something that's like genuinely contentious, then it deserves a meeting. I think this is like extra important right now because Zoom meetings are exhausting. And so you could put people in a conference room and if a meeting was going to be particularly boring, you could give them some donuts or something, but like you can't do that anymore, right? Like they're on Zoom. There's no like no computer meeting when like you're on Zoom. And so your like boring meetings have gone from like not particularly useful to like a negative energy drain. And that's why it's so important to get rid of them right now.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. So if it's boring, you got to think about that. And I also like the other thing which you said is like if it's contentious, if you're talking about problems, if there might be different opinions and like maybe that deserves to be synchronous, but otherwise like it can be async. I have to then ask about like this other concept because I feel like one of the things that starts to happen when it is a synchronous meeting and it is like a very old way of working. It's kind of like, oh, you're in the office and I see you, therefore you're working, therefore something is good. I kind of feel like there's an element of that in meetings or synchronous ones, which is like, oh, I see you, therefore you're consuming and retaining this information. But if it's asynchronous, like how do I truly know that you've read and consumed it? Is there like what do you say to that? Like, is there a way that you can, and communication is hard. How do you know if people are, especially if it's like a presentation type thing that you send to folks, like how do you make sure that it has been consumed?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think like likes often get used as red receipts. Like I definitely use them that way. I remember like very early on, I got feedback that I hadn't liked somebody's post. When I'd read it, I just read it offline. You know, and I was like, oh, my likes are important to people. Like, this is one of the powers I have in my position. And so, like, I made a point to start liking things. But I think if somebody has put a lot of work into something, then, you know, leaving a comment and, like, you know, asking, like, a question that shows that you have read it and that you've understood it is, like, really, really important. And it models that behavior and encourages other people to do the same. I also send a lot of, like, private compliments, you know? So I'll, like a post and I'll be, like, whatever, some good question. And then I'll DM the person and be, like, I really like this post that you put together. I thought it articulated this really well or whatever. And I make sure that I follow up with that kind of validation, both like publicly and privately, so people know that, you know, it's real and authentic.
Yeah, I think it's such good tactical advice there. Like, even though it's such a small thing, like an emoji to react to something, but like understanding that, like from a position, like the position that you're in, that little emoji actually carries a lot of weight. And I also love the tactical, you know, after the fact, do go out of your way and message someone and tell them that you appreciated something that they wrote. I think that's very powerful.
I mean, we talk about like the skills required to run a meeting effectively, right? To get the right people in the room, to make sure that there is some kind of consensus made, and to like have a series of follow-ups after the fact and kind of come back with them. Like those are skills for running a meeting, but like, you know, you can make that meeting a text-based post. And like you use the same skills, you ping the same people, you follow up if they haven't weighed in and say like, your opinion is valued here. You make sure it comes to some kind of consensus and you like push the action items going forward. And, you know, much in the same way that I think, you know, a manager in a co-located company might like coach people on how to run their meetings more effectively, you know, as a manager in a distributed company, like this is like something that I spend my time on. And particularly when onboarding people, you know, onboarding people into this way of working, like you have this project and this is how we're going to break it down and this is how we're going to communicate it, and helping them get to the next steps after each part. The people that I've seen come into an asynchronous context and be like the most ineffective, and almost like when you watch someone being so ineffective and it's almost like they don't understand why, are those people that when, you know, you talk to them, get to know them, you get that like their previous jobs, like their job was to go to meetings. In a distributed context, it's no one's job to go to meetings. Like meetings are just like a really a function for getting things done.
Yeah, to work forward. But you're right. Like, I mean, people's identity to a large extent is tied to this concept of a meeting. So yeah, all of a sudden
it's unhealthy.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, there's another concept that's like very related, again, in the remote context. And I feel like there's a lot of work to be done to re-educate everybody about like, how do you actually work in this modern context? And, you know, that is when talking about written communication, that silence means agreement, which obviously you have very strong views on. I think like the natural thing is if nobody disagrees, then, you know, everybody agrees. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it goes some both ways, right? Like sometimes they're like silence people take as disagreement and things just die, you know? And it's like, if you're running something, it's your responsibility that it doesn't just die, you know, either move forward or like actively kill it. Don't just like have a thread die. And then the other thing is to like make sure that the people who should weigh in and the people whose opinions you value have weighed in. Ping them on your chat app, tag them directly in the post, like whatever it is, and follow up if you don't hear back from them. And I think those are like really, really important skills. But then on the other side of that, that's kind of on the power dynamic, right? Of like, if I need approval from my boss for something, it's my job to make sure that he's weighed in on that thread, that he's given his opinion, that I've got his feedback. People on the team who haven't spoken up need to learn to speak up, because you can't kind of come back with resentment later, right? And I think, you know, when you move to this distributed context, you lose all these like signals, right? So if somebody's in a meeting and they like sat back, their arms are crossed, and they're looking kind of checked out, it's a sign that you don't have their agreement. And, you know, you can call on them and say, hey, what do you think? I know you have this experience and whatever. Like, this is the responsibility, I think, of being a good distributed worker, is that you don't have those signals anymore. They weren't healthy anyway. If you have an opinion, you should share it.
Yeah, I think like it's interesting that like everybody kind of has to take on that new responsibility, that maybe potentially be more vocal. But, you know, the other part of it is like, and, you know, eventually our technology will get there. We'll get eye tracking right in all these virtual meetings. It's hard to signal anything, frankly, from like looking at a virtual meeting with where tech is today. But what I would say is like, I feel like things like feedback are so much more important. And so like, if there is a important, you know, direction or strategy memo or something like that, or presentation, like, I feel like it's more important than ever to use, you know, whether it's like DMing people and asking them directly or doing like an anonymous survey of some sort, but that feedback function is even more important than before.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of that. And it's like really in the depths of like team transformation. I would do a lot of that in one-on-ones to be like, okay, you know, this post went up. What do you think? Like, what was the reaction from your team? And just kind of make sure that, you know, it was as expected and that people were coming along.
Hey there, just a quick pause on today's episode to let you know that we'd really appreciate you helping us spread the word about the Super Managers podcast. If you're enjoying what you're hearing so far, dial into your podcast app of choice, whether that's on Apple or Android or Spotify, and just leave us a quick review. Now back to the interview. Yeah. And so like in the same kind of concept of like synchronous and asynchronous, like one of the, obviously the points of getting together in person would have been in previous like way of functioning would have been team bonding. In kind of like a remote setting, like the whole concept of team bonding, I mean, do you feel that people can bond by just being in a meeting and just doing a status meeting that could have been async, but, you know, maybe we continue it because like there's we get to see each other and the team bonding makes it worth it? Do you agree with that?
I mean, I think you should have that meeting. I just don't think it should be a status meeting. On our team, we've been kind of adjusting our team call, because one of the things that we do as a team is we call them experiments. And so we've been trying things, you know, with the expectation that some things will fail and some things will need to be adjusted, and that it's lightweight, and we'll be like, okay, we'll try this for a little bit and we'll revisit it, and if it doesn't work, then we'll get rid of it. And the reality is we've got rid of almost nothing, you know, but we've been putting in these things. And one of the big focus for us has been this team cohesion, because there's so many people on the team already and we're still hiring who haven't met anybody else on the team. So we made a water cooler channel. I can't believe that there wasn't one before, but like just for like chit chat and stuff, although, you know, there's a lot of British people on the team, so there's been some like unexpectedly in-depth conversations about how people feel about death, which is not what I expected when I suggested the channel. We start every meeting with something called feelings time, which I really believe in. I start pretty much every meeting I run that way, and everybody just like shares how they feel and what's going on with them.
So that's in the beginning of the meeting that you just go around and ask people? Okay.
Yeah. It's like, and I'll be like, share one or more feelings. And so someone can just be like, I feel fine, you know, or someone can say like, oh, you know, I'm like stressed by this project, or like, you know, right now, like my country's going into a lockdown again and I don't feel great about it. And so then we kind of get this sense of where people are at, you know, because like there's always this like geographic diversity in how people are experiencing things on a distributed team. Since the pandemic started, I've been finding that like more stark than ever, just because of the variety in the ways of which countries are handling it. Right. And so, you know, some people are under much higher restrictions than others. Their like lives have been much more curtailed. You know, some people are not, but they have much higher anxiety because of the way their government is handling things. And so, you know, one of the agreements that we made actually on my last team, but as this was starting, was that, you know, we just couldn't know what anybody else was going through. And so we should ask and like accept that people might not want to talk about it.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, these are all, you know, things that, again, because there is no standard water cooler, there isn't like people bumping into each other in the hallway. I mean, you basically have to make space for these things. And I think that makes a lot of sense to dedicate some time in the beginning of the meeting for that versus like, let's get right to it. You know,
yeah,
get
totally.
Right to business. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And like kind of in the same context, though, of, you know, a lot of these sort of remote operations, you also talk about trust. Obviously, trust, everybody knows trust in business is a core tenet. Like you kind of have to have it in order for teams to structure and work. And you think that the just in general on remote teams that they tend to have more trust?
I think they need more trust to function. But then one thing I've always said is that like remote work is the same as it's just work, right? But the remote makes the problems of work more explicit. You know, if we go back to that terrible manager, right? I'm sure he thought that that team was like really cohesive because they ate lunch together every day. But like, they weren't, you know, we weren't, wasn't like, for like a lot of reasons. And so it's easy, like in an office to be like, no, look, everything's fine. You know, we have lunch together all the time. Like people get on, da, da, da. But you don't really know until something goes wrong. And then what are people doing? You know, are they disappearing to search for their cat, or are they like showing up and trying to be a good teammate? And I, in a remote context, like there's none of that like shortcut, you know, we know that people have like literally no connection unless we build it. And so like, I've always loved that because I'm like, now these problems are just explicit. So we're just going to work on them.
Yeah. And you talk a lot about that concept too, which is like remote work basically means you have to be intentional about almost everything. And, you know, whether it's intentional, like you said, about liking a post, DMing someone afterwards, what other intentional things do you find yourself doing?
I think a lot, especially lately, about onboarding is like a really good intentional problem. So I have this post in Quartz and we talk about onboarding, like it is giving people a sense of belonging and a sense of accomplishment. And so those are the two things that I try to be like really intentional about and, you know, which things hit which box, you know, this is your first project, you know, it's supposed to give you a sense of accomplishment, you know, because it's supposed to be small and self-contained and whatever. Then one of the other things that we do to support a sense of belonging is every, you know, because I mentioned my team does experiments, right? And every new hire gets to experiment on the next new hire. And so our first new hire on the team, like what she did, it was great. She put together a piece of advice from everybody on the team to give to the next new hire.
Oh, and
then
clever.
What he did, yeah, it's lovely. And so then what he did for you know, the new hire that came after him was he like got everybody to share an example of a project that they thought was really helpful to learn from.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I love that. That's such a great tactical tip, which is like get everybody to give a piece of advice to the new person joining on board. That's super awesome.
Right. And because it's documented, you know, it's all in there. So like every new hire gets it on their checklist and they can add their own piece of advice over time. But that one was really nice because in our team call, like we each went around and shared our piece of advice for this new person to like make him feel welcome and special. That works on belonging on two counts, right? So, you know, the previous new hire, she'd been given, you know, a sense of ownership and like power to really influence the experience for the next new hire. And then, you know, he got to see that we'd all taken time and like put something thoughtful together to make him feel welcome on the team.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, speaking of hiring, you also have this thing where you say, if it, you know, just in terms of like how you hire, one of the things that you consider during hiring is if we give people feedback and they take it and multiply it and do a lot better, then we feel a lot more excited about hiring those people. What does that mean? I'd love for you to elaborate on that.
Yeah, so like most remote companies or distributed companies, both Automattic and DuckDuckGo, we would give people projects, you know? So work samples are like, obviously there's a lot of complaints about them, but they're also proven to be like one of the least biased ways to hire somebody, right? But you know, whatever you get from people, you're looking for certain skills and you're not looking for it to be perfect, right? Like, and so kind of when we like evaluate it, we also find things that we're missing and just telling people like, oh, you know, you didn't do a particularly great job with the metrics here. Do you want to think about that again? Or, you know, you've missed this, we noticed this kind of problem in the code. Do you want to have a look at that? And then we see what they do with it. And, you know, the hires that I've felt best about and that I've seen like really go on and really excel have been people that I gave like very blunt feedback to, you know. And a guy who applied and I like rejected him and he replied and asked for feedback. And I told him that his resume and cover letter did not explain like why his experience was a fit for the job. And then he wrote me back like an essay and like, you know, corrected it. And like, you know, I given him that opportunity. And then he like knocked everything out of the park, joined, became a leader on the team, you know. And like the person who runs that team now tells me like, you know, thank you that you gave this person the feedback and you gave them the opportunity to do better. So, you know, whereas like, I think people who have ended up being maybe a little bit disappointing, like, you know, they've checked all the boxes and then you hire them and like any hiring assignment is always just like an approximation of the job, right? And at some point people are going to run into something they can't do or a place they need to learn. And then, you know, you try and give them feedback and it's like banging your head against the wall. Like they're not coachable and you're like pushing them to one exit. You're like really having to like hold their hand through it, manage their emotions. And, you know, it's like so frustrating. Like I truly believe that like being coachable is the best thing that you can do for your career. You know, the best thing that I can do for my like sanity as a manager is to try and hire people who are coachable because they are the people who I can like level up, who can take on more and more and who I like feel like I get the most out of working with and that they get the most of working with.
Yeah. So it sounds like, I mean, all these things are, let's try and figure out if this person is coachable. So if there is some feedback during the interview process and like the first reaction is to be defensive or to say, well, you know, I hear what you're saying, but here's why you're wrong. Or if they did that, then maybe that's not, and, you know, they don't have to agree, but like maybe the reaction is like, I'll ask you more questions that you can explain your feedback versus just taking a, you know, strong stance that, or being defensive.
I actually like really respect a strong stance, but like not necessarily being defensive. I like gave somebody some feedback recently and they came back and were like, you know, this is why I think you're wrong. And I read it and I was like, you know what? He makes some valid points. Let's move him forward. And we ended up hiring him. And, you know, I told him as part of that, like, I really respected how you push back on this and like without being a jerk, right? And, you know, what he told me was that he had really appreciated, or it had only been the only hiring process he'd been in where he'd been able to like give that feedback and feel like a human being.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. Yeah, and I think like the key phrase there is without being a jerk. So I think that part is definitely totally important. You know, Kate, this has been really awesome. We've, I know we're just coming up on time here, and, you know, so many different insights and, you know, particularly very useful in this world where a lot of people are getting used to working distributed and just learning what the new playbook looks like. So, but one question that we ask everybody who comes on the show is, you know, for all the managers and leaders out there looking to constantly improve at their craft of management and leadership, what are some resources, books, advice, words of wisdom? What would you leave them with?
So I guess the simple one is to get a coach. But the more complex version is deliberate practice is very hard in management because you don't tend to see the same situations again and again. Like, hopefully you don't. And so you have to figure out how to learn as much as possible from any situation, even with all the variables and all the messiness of human behavior. And like, how do you distill it? How do you take the learnings? How do you improve what you need to improve? And how do you not take on emotionally, like the stuff that like really is like that person was, you know, whatever. And I find coaching is really, really helpful for that. Like we talked about it earlier. The other thing that's really helped me a lot is writing and kind of, you know, I feel like I've fully processed a situation where I've like really distilled everything I've learned from it into a series of blog posts. I don't think writing's for everybody, but I do think it really does help people, even if it's just a journal, to just kind of really like be honest about the situations that you've been in, like, what can you take from it? What can you learn from it? And what can you adjust? Because the more you get into a position of power and the more that you're doing like mostly a good job, the less feedback you'll get. So you have to mine what I would call like implicit feedback for everything you can if you truly want to improve.
Yeah, that's incredible advice and a great place to end it. Kate, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that's it for today. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Super Managers Podcast. You can find the show notes and transcript at www.fellow.app/supermanagers. If you like the content, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe so you can get notified when we post the next episode. And please tell your friends and fellow managers about it. It'd be awesome if you could help us spread the word about the show. See you next time.